Welcome to The Impact of Trauma on Communication, Episode 84 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owigon. Last week, Greg Whiting and I had a great conversation about transforming trauma, learning to see our lived experience with new awareness and wisdom, and using these to build stronger, healthier relationships with ourselves and others. Of course, a major component of building stronger, healthier relationships is communication. Yet trauma can impact our ability to effectively communicate with others in several detrimental ways. Today, Karen Robinson, a service-driven social worker, therapist, and coach with 24 years of clinical experience who specializes in trauma recovery, anxiety, and depression, joins me to talk about this often misunderstood impact of trauma. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Fred Rogers. Anything that's human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. When we can talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary. The people we trust with that important talk can help us know that we are not alone. Karen Lynn Robinson is a licensed clinical social worker and the founder and CEO of Heal, Thrive, Dream, LLC. She received both her BSW and MSW from the University of Maine. Karen is a genuine, authentic, and compassionate provider. Heal, Thrive, Dream is a mother-daughter company that includes a wide range of services and products for women recovering from trauma. They offer holistic therapy, coaching, courses, and a wide variety of learning and inspirational products. Karen, thank you so much for joining me. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Karen, I know that one of your specialties is trauma recovery, and trauma is one of those life experiences that can bring with it many challenging after effects that may impact how we relate to others. Why do some trauma survivors struggle with effective communication?
Trauma survivors in general, after they've survived a tragedy, struggle in their relationships with interpersonal communication because they don't trust themselves. So therefore, it impacts how they can trust others. And when you cannot trust others, that of course will impact how you interact and communicate.
That's an interesting observation, Karen. I can see how that lack of trust or unsureness of ability to trust both ourselves and others could affect our insecurity about what we might say in terms of trusting ourselves, and then also in terms of trusting others, wondering what we are safe being able to say to them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's a vulnerable time.
It is. And when you say that it's a vulnerable time, how long does that vulnerable time last for trauma survivors?
It depends on the survivor and it depends on the trauma, the length of the trauma. Was it a one-time event? Was it multiple times? So there's many, many factors that impact a survivor's recovery. Some people are able to bounce back really quickly and don't have post-traumatic stress. Other people with more complex histories may very well have complex PTSD, but we don't see that until 30 to 60 days afterwards.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that there was that kind of delay between the traumatic event and the PTSD manifesting itself in a way that could be recognized.
Yeah, that's because there's a diagnosis before post-traumatic stress. Acute stress disorder. And that's what survivor may get if they go to therapy or see a doctor immediately after a trauma. A lot of those symptoms go away pretty quickly if someone's already very resilient and healthy and hasn't had a lot of trauma. And then people that are more compromised, they may not lose those symptoms within the 30-day to 60-day mark, and they go on to have post-traumatic stress disorder and need further treatment.
I know that there's a phenomenon that can sometimes go with trauma called dissociation. Could you explain for our listeners, please, what dissociation is and then how it impacts a survivor's ability to be able to really listen to others?
Sure. When a survivor is under attack, let's say, sexual assault. It is so painful for their mind that they try to leave their body so they don't feel it as strongly. And it's sort of like they're hovering above their body, then they're looking down. And so it's a disconnect of emotion, pain, sensory. And then what happens is every time the survivor feels pain or strong emotions, that dissociation kicks in again. And that can happen in school where they could be in class and then it's not painful, but it's not capturing their attention. So they've already learned the skill to disassociate. So they sort of blank out for a little bit and miss what the teacher is teaching. So that's one way that dissociation can show up later after trauma. And then in relationships, it could be that your significant other or a coworker, or maybe your child is speaking to you, but you had already disassociated for whatever reason. You weren't feeling engaged with a conversation, or you were triggered by something that happened earlier in the day. But whatever the reason was, you've left that conversation, and thus the person speaking to you does not feel heard.
Interesting. As I'm listening to you, it sounded a bit like the person who is dissociating is doing that consciously. And I'm wondering, is that an accurate understanding, or is dissociation something that can happen unconsciously, or both?
I think it's both. It's more subconscious when you think you're paying attention. So you're in class and you're determined to get the good grade in geometry. And you're taking the notes, and then all of a sudden you start to float away and you come back and class is almost over. You miss this huge chunk of time. So a lot of times survivors report they're not wanting it to happen. So that would be this unconscious or subconscious. And then there's other times where it is more conscious, like if they're in another situation that could turn traumatic, or they're in proximity to their abuser and are trying not to think about it, they may dissociate. So it's actually both.
Interesting. So they could be aware and consciously dissociate, and then it could be an unconscious thing. What about the return from the dissociation? Is that something that is within their control, or is that something that just happens when whatever part of them felt the need to leave then feels ready to come back? How does that work?
Yeah, this is controversial in our field because of the diagnosis of dissociative disorder and the different parts that we can have show up after trauma. You know, the wounded child part, the protector part, the critic. So it really is kind of complicated. When I'm working with survivors and I want to teach them how to become more present and mindful of the moment when they first recognize that they've left, is I might suggest take an ice cube and just gently rub your wrist with it to help you feel more grounded in the moment. Or maybe go outside and plant your feet into the earth so you can feel more grounded. Or just bring yourself to be more present in the moment is kind of the techniques that I use. Or just making sure that your environment is safe, because a lot of times dissociation is triggered when someone may not feel safe. So there's techniques where you can move your head all the way to the right and scan the room as far as you can. And then you do it all the way to the left. And then you're able to say, okay, right now I am safe. So let me be fully present and focus on what I'm doing.
I would imagine that someone who has been traumatized might have difficulty showing up in an assertive kind of way. If a trauma survivor is struggling with assertiveness, what can they do?
Excellent question. There's many techniques that I teach, but one is learning their nonverbal communication and also looking at how direct and indirect their statements are. So do they happen to ignore someone when a partner may say something they don't like? Or do they shrug their shoulders or walk away or not have eye contact? So whatever the limitations they exhibit during the time of communication is what we work on. I also use a lot of I messages where they take responsibility for their piece in the interaction, but also portraying to their partner as concisely as possible what they need. So an example is, I feel upset when you blare your music because I'm trying to study. And then as you and I had talked earlier about this subject, following it up with a concrete action plan is a beautiful way to do that. So it's a way for the survivor and the partner or whoever to check in with each other later, like, how am I doing on this? Am I communicating effectively, or do I need to attune? And then the other person, the communication is, am I honoring your need? Did I turn the radio down low enough so you could study? You know, and that takes away the blame and shame that comes with trauma. A lot of survivors have a lot of shame and they blame other people fairly easily too, even though they may not have anything to do with the trauma. So we work on identifying all those pieces of communication and also how they're feeling, and then also working on action steps that they can take.
I love the way that you use iMessages in your work, Karen, and I've talked about iMessages in previous episodes of this podcast, and yet in all the work that I've done with teaching people iMessages, it never occurred to me the kind of applications that you just described, because what I'm hearing from you is that in the use of the iMessage, a couple of really important things are happening for that trauma survivor. Number one, there's an assertiveness that naturally goes with self-reference. I'm having this experience, and helps one become more direct. And in speaking of oneself, that is a naturally assertive way of speaking. And then also there's that empowerment to be able to speak one's truth. And even when it's something relatively minor, like your music is disturbing my studies, being able to say that in an iMessage and being able to make that statement about, here's my experience, here's the impact of the experience, and owning it, there's even more empowerment there. And then being able to make that request. And the way that you just described it, it also brings in collaboration, especially if there's that ability to do that kind of debrief afterwards, like, did I clarify myself well, coming from the person who used the iMessage and from the person who received it?
How did my response work for you? Or something like that.
That really creates a nice kind of collaboration and partnership. What a great application of that tool, Karen.
Thank you. It took some time to really think through the perspective of how trauma impacts every area of our life, even what can seem like basic skills on just communicating what we need or what we want. And it turns out it's not that easy for any of us, and the more complicated for a survivor who's got a lot of thoughts spinning in their mind, a lot of self-criticism, and a lot of suspiciousness about the world around them.
Sure. And that removal of the shame and the blame through the use of the I statement, I would imagine, helps mitigate that as well.
Yes. And once they can see that the person that they're communicating with is not getting defensive, like the past communication cycle might have, because it's not you, like the attack, but it's a calm statement. I feel, you know, it's taking responsibility for his or her feelings. You know, when you know, it's showing the advocacy piece by saying, hey, you're doing something that's impacting me. It's very powerful for people.
I can hear that. And then following that with the guidance as to here's what would help improve the situation, I think is really helpful too. And you bring up a good point. When you were talking earlier, you talked about those basic communication skills, which to people who have had some exposure to them may feel basic. And yet it's not something that people are taught in their childhood. We don't get taught in school how to properly communicate in ways that are not just polite. We're all taught how to be polite and so forth, but to really effectively communicate, those aren't skills that we grow up with and that we have at our fingertips through a lifetime of use. It's something that many of us have to be taught. And as you're pointing out, for someone who has survived trauma, there are so many complexities to that experience. And of course, those complexities are going to affect how we relate to others, how we communicate with others, so many aspects of how we show up in the world and how we experience the world.
Yes, I agree with that. In fact, the communication skills I teach to clients with depression, with anxiety, with conflicts in the workplace. So I think it would be helpful if schools taught some of these, what I call life skills. I worked in high school for a while, and one of the courses I taught was life skills, and it was everything from how to make a decision to how to communicate effectively. Yeah, life skills like communication, it would be so helpful if we all had more exposure and training to that. So thankfully, with podcasts like yours, people have now a good resource for that.
Thank you. And how wonderful that those communication skills, those life skills overall, were being taught in a high school, and that you had the opportunity to be that teacher and teach them such important skills.
Back in the day when I was in high school, none of that was available to us at all. And the only exposure we got to anything having to do with communication was English and grammar, but not those most important interpersonal communication skills. Understanding that there are communication difficulties for trauma survivors, is there a way that they can mindfully move from that place of communication difficulty into a place of communication skill? And what would that look like?
Everybody's roadmap looks different, right? And so that's the beautiful piece. To help clients build the roadmap. One of the things I get them to do is initially just pick one person in your life. Who is that person that you struggle to communicate with? So that's the first question. And then the second is, what is the difficult issue that you want to address with them? So again, it's what is the difficult issue? So being able to articulate those first two questions at the beginning is really helpful for people. I encourage survivors to then spend some time in session or out of session journaling their communication dilemma. Like, what is it they think is going on? Spend time reflecting. What do they think makes it hard to communicate? Is it something about them? Is it something about the other person? Then I will ask them some guided questions they can journal about and talk about in session. Like, what is it that gets in the way? Are you trying to avoid burdening the other person, or are you worried about hurting their feelings? Do you worry that they will see you as being critical or needy? Are you attempting to avoid conflict? Are you worried that they're going to dismiss you? You know, and what else are you mulling over? I try to get the survivors to get all their thoughts and feelings out on paper about that person and the situation. And then doing that kind of strategy, I call it brain dumping, also helps people sleep. As we read what they came up with, then we spend time exploring, are there ways to communicate your worries with a person in a way that they may not dismiss you, in a way that they won't see you as needy? Or are your worries even realistic? You know, and so I get them to think about how do they overcome unrealistic worries. So a lot of writing. And then we work on the communication goals. And there's four goals that I usually use as an example. Do they want to be understood and truly heard? Are they looking to feel loved, closer to that person, accepted? Or are they looking to have their feelings to be validated? And then asking, how can I maximize my chances in getting these outcomes? And so how we learn to maximize that is we then spend time looking at past communication patterns. Because the survivor will often think they can predict how a person will respond, even if it's a new conversation, based on past experiences. And sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's not. So we look at how were they not supportive in the past? What did they say or do that you found unhelpful? Did you notice them changing the subject? Or did they give you terrible advice? Did they seem uncomfortable? Or were they critical? Were they close-lipped, overprotective? Or was there something else going on? You know, trying to get them to get their ideas out on what the concerns were about past responses with that person. The next area of the roadmap is looking at different types of support. I want the survivor to be very clear about the support they need when they're communicating. And there's four different types of support that one could be looking for. One could be informational support, just seeking information on something. How do I do X? Sometimes tangible support. If you broke your leg, you may be asking someone, hey neighbor, I have broken my leg. I could really appreciate your help with mowing the lawn. Is that something you'd be willing to do for me? So just being very clear, that's called tangible support. You need something done. Emotional support is when you want to feel validated, either your fears, your worries, or just some empathy with what you're going through. The last kind of support is self-esteem support. Maybe you just want that person to help you feel better about yourself and what you're struggling with. Then the question is, how can you communicate this need to the person to increase your chances of getting that type of support you need? Then we work on being more direct. What's the best way, knowing this person, to be verbally direct and clear? And what happens when you're verbally indirect? Really examining that. And then for the final piece of the roadmap, we do a remaining reflective practice. You know, reflecting over the questions they can pose and really give consideration. What's the risk of trying this new way of communicating? What's the pros? What's the cons? So clearly, if the person they have the conflict with is someone that's an abuser of any kind of way, I may encourage them not to have this conversation. You know, that may not be the most appropriate thing. Or if it's someone that's told them no in the past, looking at what they can offer or suggest that might get them a yes, and being okay with the no. And maybe that's not the person you go to for support. Maybe we work on identifying other people. So again, all survivors have a different roadmap. How I work it is trying to get survivors to be very reflective of the entire process in order for them to get their needs met.
Yes, as I was listening to you, that's what kept striking me, is how reflective this process is, this roadmap that you're describing, and how deep a person goes into those explorations. And it's both deep, and then it also seems as though it's broadening their thinking as they're doing these explorations and getting that kind of clarity within themselves in terms of all of the things that you just described in the roadmap. There was a lot there, and it sounds like it's a very well thought out process. As our listeners are hearing about this roadmap and hearing all that you've said, is there a place where they can go to get more information or to be able to see these elements of the roadmap or just to talk with you a bit and learn more about your work?
Sure. The best way to either contact me or see my websites or the different programs I offer is KarenRobinson360.com.
Excellent. Thank you. Karen, I understand you're going to be presenting at a conference on trauma in October. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I am speaking at the 2022 Trauma Recovery Summit, which is completely virtual. The topic I am speaking on this year is about how to get unstuck. Trauma survivors often can get into a rut of cycles of starting and stopping, and that can really impact their self-worth. And so the session will focus on how to stop that wheel spinning and making commitments to the things that you're working on. And I will help survivors during that training by giving them simple prompts they can journal about and tools that they can use to shift their thinking and change their behavior so they're finishing with what they start. That will also include some mindset work and just some productivity tips. So if you're a survivor, I highly recommend you check it out. There's lots of other great speakers as well.
How can our listeners get access to that information about that conference?
Yes, I have a special link and it will be available to everyone in the show notes.
All right. There's so many gifts that you offer, Karen, and I really appreciate the gift of your being here with us today and all of the insights and information that you've shared. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Learn more about Karen Robinson and all that she has to offer trauma survivors at KarenRobinson360.com. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one, choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider. Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share Co-Creating Peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON at bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.